We are now receiving reports that the number may be much higher than that. We have unconfirmed reports that the number may be even as high as 30.
The Rohingya death toll appears to rise. It's Tuesday, April 9th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us, and you can join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, monsoons head toward Bangladesh. Australia sounds an alarm. Philippine rebels find outside help. Measles on the rise, and farmers fight floods. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar's military said Friday six Rohingya Muslims killed and nine wounded in an aerial attack in the western state of Rakhine this week were affiliated with an armed rebel group. The army-run Miawadi newspaper said the villagers were together with terrorists while the army was cracking down on the Arakan Army's terrorist activities Wednesday. Ravina Shamdasani is a spokeswoman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and first revealed to VOA Asia's Ira Melman that the original death toll of seven people in a helicopter attack in western Myanmar last week has risen. She says there is growing evidence it could be that some 30 people were killed by the Myanmar Army helicopter attack.
We had issued a report on Friday saying that we understand that at least seven Rohingya Muslims had been killed in a helicopter attack by the Tatmadaw, the military of Myanmar. We are now receiving reports that the number may be much higher than that. We have unconfirmed reports that the number may be even as high as 30 who are unaccounted for. In response, we understand that a military spokesperson has said that these were terrorists who were supporting the Arakan army. We reject that accusation and we ask the government of Myanmar and the Tatmadaw to ensure that civilians are not targeted and that heavy artillery is not used in civilian areas on the pretext of national security. We are calling on both sides to cease hostilities and to respect international human rights and international humanitarian law. The Tatmadaw, the army of Myanmar, has reacted to the attacks by the Arakan army with excessive force. We are now seeing, since the 3rd of April, the use of helicopters in civilian areas. The Arakan army, on their part, we understand that the fighting has now moved from the hills where it had begun down to the urban areas, and residential areas are being used by the Arakan army, putting civilians' lives at risk. We've also heard that the Arakan army has been targeting public administration officials and police, and that there have been targeted killings even. So we're calling on both sides to, first of all, cease the hostilities, and if hostilities are carried out, to spare civilians, to ensure the protection of civilians.
Why has there been such a resurgence in violence after so many people, so many Rohingya were forced to cross into Bangladesh?
So what's very important is to ensure that people understand the distinction between this, the Arakan army, and the Rohingya issue. This Arakan army was established 10 years ago, and their objective was to create a state of their own, a Buddhist ethnic Rakhine state. This is a completely distinct group from the Rohingya Muslims. So this is actually completely unrelated to the exodus of the Rohingya Muslims. It's very important to have that distinction because there's often a misunderstanding that this Arakan army is composed of Rohingya Muslims when it couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, there has been a lot of reports of the Arakan army as well targeting the Rohingya Muslims. The resurgence, there was an attack in January by the Arakan army against several police border posts the government of Myanmar. The Tatmadaw, which is the army of Myanmar, then responded with strong force and received orders from the government of Myanmar to crush the Arakan army. This led to a resurgence in clashes, which has only increased in recent weeks.
So what in reality can you do, can the UN do, besides to plead for an end to the violence?
We do not have access, unfortunately, to Myanmar, in spite of repeated requests. But what is important is that we're putting the news out there. Even if we do not have access, the fact that civilians are suffering, the fact that civilians are dying, should not simply go unnoticed. We need to raise international attention and international concern on this. We need to assure the government of Myanmar, the Tatmadaw, and the Arakan army that the international community is watching and is willing and keen to hold accountable the perpetrators of this violence against civilians. The people must not be allowed to suffer in silence.
What is it about Myanmar that even a leader like Aung San Suu Kyi can't seem to lead her country to peace?
Unfortunately, we have found that the leadership in Myanmar has failed in an abominable way. There has been, far from an attempt to actually address the violations that have taken place, the very serious human rights violations that have taken place, there is often a blanket denial that anything is wrong. Even when 1 million Rohingya Muslims fled the country, there was a denial of the systematic discrimination, the institutionalized discrimination, and the violence that they had been facing over decades. Even now, there seems to be a denial that anything is wrong. The government of Myanmar is insisting that the conditions are there for the Rohingya Muslims to return to the country. I mean, this is completely untrue, patently untrue. And we are very disappointed that the continued reaction of the government of Myanmar seems to be denial and a continuation of the violations and of impunity.
Shyam Dasani said the government of Myanmar must be held accountable and responsible for what it has done to its own people. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Philippine communist rebels grow new aid sources as China steps away. Nissan ousts Goen and Kelly, Renault's Senard new chairman. No breakthrough expected in EU-China summit. North Korea delays beach resort plans. Analysts blame sanctions. UN fears dozens of Rohingya killed in Myanmar attack. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more with photos and video can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia, and you can stop by the voanews.com website as well. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The UN Refugee Agency and partners are scaling up emergency preparations to help hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees withstand a second monsoon season in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Heavy rains are expected to fall in a few weeks. Aid agencies are racing to shore up flimsy shelters and stabilize shaky terrain before the monsoon season begins. The UN Refugee Agency says the work ahead is monumental, but preparations are off to a better start this year than last. Aid agencies last year had to deal with a massive influx of more than 740,000 Rohingya refugees fleeing violence and persecution in Myanmar. They arrived over a period of a few months, straining local resources and requiring vast amounts of humanitarian assistance. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic tells VOA, "There is a clear danger of this untenable situation becoming an emergency within an emergency if the vulnerable campsite is hit by a cyclone or torrential rains."
Thanks to the mitigating work that has been done, and there was some heavy engineering work in terms of flattening of the land, flattening of the hills, a lot of the work has also gone into shoring up the steep hills to prevent the landslides. We've also moved more than 26,000 refugees to safer locations.
Mahecic says all the mitigating work has paid off. He says the refugee settlement made it through last year's monsoon season without any major incidents or substantial loss of life.
There are assessments that if the camps were to be hit frontally by a cyclone, that possibly up to 70% of the shelters would be destroyed.
Besides strengthening camp infrastructure, Maheche says Rohingya refugees are being trained as first responders ahead of the cyclone. He says aid workers are going from house to house to inform people about the safety measures they need to take to better protect themselves from the monsoon. During the monsoons, he says volunteer first responders will tell families how to prevent the spread of disease and will offer counseling in case of need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, Korean Air says Chairman Cho Young-ho has died at the age of 70 in the United States. The airline said Cho died early Monday from a chronic ailment. His indictment on multiple charges, including embezzlement and tax evasion, was one of many scandals involving Korean Air's founding family members. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us, as always, on VOA Asia. In rare public comments, Australia's spy chief has said his nation faces a list of security threats that is almost endless and greater than ever before. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us more.
Nick Warner is the head of Australia's newly created Office of National Intelligence, which aims to coordinate the work of the country's security agencies. Warner says Australia is confronting between 90 or 100 current security risks. They include threats from terrorism, both right-wing and Islamist extremism, tensions between China and the United States, regional unrest, and North Korea's nuclear program. There is a warning that territorial disputes and a trade war between Beijing and Washington will have an effect on Australia, which has close military ties to the US, but has relied on commerce with China for its recent prosperity. There are concerns, too, that the defeat of the group calling itself Islamic State in Syria could mean that foreign Islamic militants could return home to Europe, as well as Australia and Southeast Asia. At least 30 Australians are reportedly housed at a refugee camp in Syria following the fall of the ISIS stronghold in the town of Baghouz. Warner says Australia's intelligence community is facing unparalleled challenges.
Australia's strategic environment is changing quickly and significantly. Australia is facing some of the most challenging strategic circumstances that it has for decades. The world is more complex, and arguably the world is more dangerous than it was. I could give you an almost endless list of challenges.
Closer to home, Warner sees emerging challenges with Australia's nearest neighbour, Papua New Guinea. Its population of 7 million people is expected to soar to 20 million in the next two decades, putting immense stress on natural resources such as water and also electricity supplies. Australia has 10 intelligence agencies. Its national terrorism threat level is at probable. It indicates that individuals or groups have the intent and capability to carry out an attack in Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
No security threat to Australia, but rather a welcomed visitor. A Dutchman climbed into his electric car 3 years ago and set off on a journey to the land down under. On Sunday, a motorcade of electric vehicles escorted him and his converted Volkswagen across an iconic bridge as he finished his record-setting adventure. VOA's Arash Arabasadi plugs us in to ride along.
Sunday in Australia. An epic journey of 95,000 kilometers rolled to an end.
Since March 2016, I've been driving from Amsterdam to Sydney in a fully electric car and without any money.
Dutch adventurer Wiebe Walker drove a 2009 Volkswagen Golf. He named it the Blue Bandit, and together, with help from online donations, they made history.
I asked people to help me out, sign up to my website, and support me by offering a meal, place to sleep, or electricity for the car.
The dynamic duo set a record for the longest recorded trip in an electric car. Walker says his course was plotted by the help he received from people online, and the trip gave him the chance to prove wrong some critics.
My goal with this trip has been to show people the advantages of electric mobility, but a lot of people didn't want to start driving electric because there are a lot of prejudices. People think they're not reliable or you cannot cover long distances. So I thought I want to do something which is kind of insane as driving from Amsterdam to literally the other side of the world to basically show that it can be done.
Walker and the Bandit drove 1,119 days, more than 3 years, through 33 countries and nearly 100,000 kilometers. The journey that started in March 2016 came to an end Sunday. Walker says the drive was to inspire and educate about a carbon-free future. Bad news for would-be shoppers of his car, though. Walker says Blue Bandit is one of only 50 such electrics ever made. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
No word yet if there's going to be a return trip home. Coming up, fighting rebels and their support. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, Japanese automaker Nissan has ousted from its board former chairman Carlos Ghosn and another executive, American Greg Kelly, who are facing charges of financial misconduct. Both Ghosn and Kelly have denied the allegations against them. Ghosn was rearrested for a fourth time last week. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a beleaguered group of Mao Zedong-inspired rebels in the Philippines is tapping funds from overseas and recruits from among ideological sympathizers at home to help battle the government for the next 50 years as a former benefactor communist China backs away. Analysts like Herman Kraft, political science professor at the University of the Philippines, says the Communist Party of the Philippines National People's Army is recruiting ideologically aligned members at Philippine universities and in poor parts of the archipelago. But he says the government is also trying to calm the communist front through peace talks at local levels.
I don't think that they're actually receiving any assistance from China right now. China's still betting on the idea of maintaining the good relations with the Philippines. Unless relations really take a nosedive, then I don't think that China would actually risk that.
The European Union has been accused of sending money through nonprofits to the National People's Army. Some Catholic priests are also believed to be helping. This support gives the group more resources to resist the government, which stepped up its fight in 2017. China once helped arm the rebels, but had stopped by 2011. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. This news from VOA Asia, 37 people believed to be Rohingya Muslims from Myanmar were found Monday on a beach in northern Malaysia. The latest arrivals in what authorities fear could be a new wave of people smuggled by sea. See more online at VOA 60 and find all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, public health authorities are coping with outbreaks of measles in communities where vaccination rates are low. In the United States, this is fueled by a growing movement of people who view vaccines as dangerous. Mike O'Sullivan reports that the battle is being fought on the internet and in state legislatures.
While measles persists in other parts of the world, mostly because of a lack of resources to vaccinate people, in the United States, a growing number of people are reluctant to vaccinate their children because they fear it's dangerous.
And we have growing pockets of susceptibility, so that when we do have someone travel from New York to Israel or from Europe to Disneyland or whatever you envision, we have the opportunity for much larger outbreaks.
There are now measles cases in 15 states, including outbreaks in Washington and New York. California, Mississippi, and West Virginia do not allow exemptions from vaccinations, except for medical reasons. 47 states allow exemptions.
Of those 47, there are 18 that also allow non-medical exemptions for reasons of personal or philosophical beliefs, and that's where the battleground is.
Most people recover from measles, but in the United States, 1 in 1,000 who contract the disease will die. the anti-vaccine movement gained momentum when a 1998 study, later retracted, linked autism to the MMR vaccine that inoculates against measles, mumps, and rubella, giving ammunition to critics.
Like other vaccines, it's not required to be safety tested.
But public health agencies and major medical organizations say after decades of use, the MMR vaccine has been proven safe and highly effective. The autism link has been repeatedly disproven, says vaccine researcher Dr. Peter Hotez, whose daughter has autism. He says misinformation is spread on social media with messages targeted by region.
So with Texas, they see the soft underbelly being the far political right, the Tea Party, and they use Tea Party language. Up in the Pacific Northwest, in Washington State or Oregon, they might use language of the far left.
Medical experts say the vaccine is essential to public health because measles is highly contagious.
Even if you don't share the room with the person at the same time, the virus can remain in the air for at least a couple of hours,
infecting anyone who is susceptible and potentially causing deadly outbreaks like many underway around the world. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Right now is when farmers in the Midwest United States should be preparing for planting, but instead they're dealing with floodwater, mud, and cleanup. In March, melting snow combined with a so-called bomb cyclone storm that caused historic flooding in fields and communities across the Midwest. One farmer in Nebraska says it may take years for his farm to get back to normal. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has his story.
Still in the days. I guess I'm still absorbing all the loss that we have. It's going to take a while before I can get it all understood.
This is what the flood left behind. A mess in the fields and a house unlivable.
Water was right up to here. We tore all the carpeting out, but too bad the foundation had to give away on the south side.
Tom Geisler said in 10 minutes...
That's where it caved out.
The water filled up his basement and crept into his 134-year-old farmhouse. Farming has been in Geisler's family for five generations.
This used to be my great-grandfather's place, but he lost it a long time ago, and then it's been resold and sold two other times, and I finally bought it back in 1982.
Geisler farms corn, soybeans, hay, and cattle. During the worst of the flood, he remembers helplessly hearing his calves, just recently born.
Bawling all night, yeah, that just about made his heart broken, but they survived. I thought they'd be gone. Couldn't even get to my calves. It was 5 foot deep out there. I couldn't feed them. Two calves are completely gone. They floated away, and two cows died.
He worries what the stress will do to the rest of his cattle, who had been standing in ice-cold water. As for his land, some areas have sand deposits from the river that he'll have to scrape and remove after the land dries up, before he can start planting, late in the growing season this spring.
I've been farming for 43 years. We lived on this place for 32 years since I've been married my wife, Frances. Never had anything like this before. My mother's been in her place all of her life, and she's 90 years old, and she's never seen anything like it either.
Getting to his mother's house a mile away has not been easy. The water left behind so much topsoil, now mud, that Geisler either walks in or drives a tractor to get there and feed the cattle.
We've always been resilient, so hopefully we can come back and farm some more. You know, I'm the fifth generation of farmers, so hopefully we can continue that trend. I don't want to give up. Sometimes you feel like it, but I don't want to. Sometimes it takes a toll on you, mentally and physically.
Geisler's younger son will follow in his footsteps. With some help and better weather, Geisler can start rebuilding his life. But he says it'll take 2 years or longer for his farm to recover. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Hooper, Nebraska.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find our full-length programs on iTunes, SoundCloud, and, of course, on our VOA Asia page at voanews.com. It's great in case you happen to miss any or all of our show, you can just go and look it up and it's right there for you. You can also download us as a podcast. You can hear us on the radio. A lot of great radio stations around Asia carry our program, like the voice of Chung Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And we send our thanks across the room to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day.